It's never a success in the postseason when you lose. Not for me.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd, and as always, you can find me on Twitter at redrock_bball, and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, which I should have mentioned already. We are doing another season recap podcast today. It's going to be the Cleveland Cavaliers, cranking out two podcasts a day at the moment. I hope you guys are enjoying the content. Again, a quick reminder, if you do want to be a part of upcoming Dynasty Leagues, there is an application form on my Twitter timeline. You'll see it there. If you can't see it, go and tweet at me and I'll send you the link to fill in that application form for one of the, or for as many as you want, of the six upcoming new Fantasy Basketball Dynasty Leagues that we're going to be running this coming season. Cleveland Cavaliers, we've got stuff to talk about. Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it.
All right. The Cleveland Cavaliers finished the season 50-32, the fourth seed in the Eastern Conference, of course. They made it through all the way to the NBA Finals, I guess surprising many, including myself, and then ended up getting swept by the Golden State Warriors in the NBA Finals, which just concluded an interesting season, to say the least, for the Cavs, with internal turmoil, with trading away over half the roster, with absolutely piss-poor defense for the majority of the season, with surprising playoff performances. And this is a team that could be absolutely 100%, or maybe not 100%, maybe 70% different again as we head into 18 and 19. They do have the 8th pick coming up in this draft as a part of the Kyrie Irving trade. That was the Brooklyn pick, came via Boston and ended up with pick 8. So yeah, real chance to get an impact-ish type player. Could be a guy like Michael Porter Jr. It could be someone like Colin Sexton. It could be Mikal Bridges. It could be Miles Bridges. It could be Wendell Carter. It could be shit. Imagine if a guy like Jaren Jackson falls down there. There are so many different options in this draft. That's why it's so exciting. Cleveland have an opportunity to draft a starter caliber player with that selection. Of course, if we're going to talk about their free agents, we have to start with, of course, LeBron James.
LeBron James.
He has a $35.6 million player option. There's always the Chris Paul option here for LeBron, that he picks up that option so he can be traded to another team. I would say the odds of him remaining in Cleveland feel like they're less than 50%. I don't know where he's going. I would say Los Angeles and Philadelphia seem like the two number one destinations. I just want him to screw everything up and just go somewhere weird. Go to the Blazers. Go to bloody, go to Denver. Go to Utah. Go to Orlando. Just completely screw everything up. It'll be really, really humorous to see what goes on with that. But if he is the big news there, of course, with this Cleveland Cavaliers team, and his absence or presence changes the impact on everyone heading into next year. They have Jose Calderon, Jeff Green.
My name is Jeff.
And Kendrick Perkins, who is alive and well, as unrestricted free agents heading into next season. And Akaro White, who is also on this roster, is a non-guaranteed deal. And Rocket Rodney Hood is a restricted free agent who has cost himself millions and millions of dollars this season with his subpar play in Utah. His worse than subpar play in Cleveland, his refusal to enter a game, and his general ability to shit his pants when standing on an NBA court. So we'll see exactly what happens there with Rocket. He could very easily take that qualifying offer of about $7 million for next season and try and rehabilitate his value, or take a 1 year, $4 or $5 million deal somewhere else in the league, get a larger role, and work himself into a bigger role in the 2019 free agency class, because it was an absolutely horrendous season from Rocket this year when he had the opportunity to really become a 20-point scorer. But in the end, he just became an absolute nothing of a player for the majority of the time. Really disappointing, because he's a guy that I have quite liked at times in the past, especially heading into this season, where I thought he had a decent chance to become a solid player. Let's start, of course, with LeBron, who is 33 years of age. He played all 82 games for the first time in his NBA career, 37 minutes a game. That led the NBA in overall minutes, 27.5 points, 8.6 rebounds, 9.1 assists, 1.8 triples, 1.4 steals, 0.9 blocks, 54, 73, 37, a true shooting of 62, a usage of 31.7. He was the fifth overall player in fantasy value in per game numbers. Absolutely stunning, the sort of numbers that LeBron was able to put up this season. We saw him increase his points per game. He saw him increase his assists per game, his steals per game, his blocks per game, his threes per game, even his rebounds per game were basically the same as what they were the previous season, all while seeing a big bump up in his free throw percentage, which had inexplicably dropped by 6 percentage points the year before. It rebounded back to the 73.5 mark, which he'd been at the year prior to that, and also continued to hit 36% of his threes. I don't know what more there is to say about LeBron. Actually, I'll say this. I think there's a real possibility he is overdrafted. Now, he was underdrafted this year. I was all about drafting LeBron in the 8-9 zone. Probably 9 was, and I got him in a couple of leagues. People were going, fall off. I'm going to take him in the second round. He clearly exceeded where I was able to draft him, but I've seen certain rankings come out for next season, which I'll put this out there, and no offense to people who do rankings. Now, if you're doing rankings for next season already, you're already wrong. It's simple as that. I hate rankings at the best of times. I'm all about projections and not rankings, but it's literally impossible for you to do rankings at this point of the year, because free agency hasn't occurred, the draft hasn't occurred, trades haven't occurred, nothing has occurred. So nothing makes sense to have have rankings out at this point. But I'm seeing him being ranked as the second player in fantasy in certain situations, which there is no way that I would want to take LeBron there at that point. There's still uncertainty with him. What sort of team does he go to? I think that there's a chance that based on this bounce back and the general consensus, and I completely agree with this, that he is the best player in the NBA, people will go, oh, he's back. He's back to being a number two, number three guy. Well, over the last few years, he hasn't been that strong. This year, he was, as I said, fifth. The year before, ninth. The year before, seventh. The year before, eighth. His last season in Miami, he was the third best overall fantasy player. So he hasn't been a perpetual number one guy, unlike Kevin Durant, who had multiple strings of being the number one guy. LeBron had always been a little bit stepped down there. And now I'm seeing these rankings come out saying, oh, he's going to be two next year. Well, he hasn't been number two for at least the last 5 years. I think that's a little bit of a stretch for LeBron. So a guy who you could always get a little bit of value on in drafts recently, the last 2 years, I think that value might be stripped away as we head into this next season. There's not really too much more to say about LeBron, though. We all know what he does. We all know what his strengths are. We all know what his weaknesses are. One thing I didn't mention, I should have mentioned, is just talking about the overall team here. They were 12th overall in pace, 5th in offense, and a disgustingly bad 29th in defense. They jack up a ton of threes, as we know, 4th in three-point attempt rate, 3rd in effective field goal percentage, a really average rebounding team, especially offensive rebounding. But it's those three-pointers, the decent assist numbers, but they don't get steals, they don't generate blocks. You know, there are issues with this team, fantasy-wise and real life, and things are going to be very, very different for this team next season, by all appearances or all accounts. Kevin Love, the next guy we want to talk about, he played 59 games this season, another injury-shortened season for Love, dealt with concussions through the year. Far from his best year, and he's very much a long way removed from the situations or the sort of performances he was putting up in Minnesota. But still, in only 28 minutes per game, quite a low number, 17.6 points and 9 rebounds, 2.3 triples, 1.7 assists, 0.7 steals, 0.4 blocks, 56, 88, and 42%, a true shooting of 61, and he was the 38th ranked player this season. His scoring saw a dip this year, even without Kyrie around, but that's mainly because of the fewer minutes that he played this season. His rebounding also suffered a little bit of a hit. He's rebounding per 36. He's never going to be a steals and blocks guy. And curiously, I thought without Kyrie around, he'd get a little bit more of that ball handling responsibility, outlet pass throwing that he did in Minnesota, but that wasn't the case. It's LeBron dominating the ball, and that has clearly impacted what Kevin Love has been able to do. Now, if LeBron leaves this team, there's a real chance that Love does get traded as well, but he will be 30 at the start of the NBA season. So we're not expecting him to return back to being that guy that he was in Minnesota. And forgot those of you forget, in the 13-14 season, he was the 7th ranked fantasy player in Minnesota, averaging 26 and 12 and a half, 4.5 assists, 2.5 threes. Yeah, they're really elite numbers. He's not going back to a 26 and 13 guy with almost 5 assists. Could he go from being a 16 and or 17 and 9 guy to being a 20 and 10 guy with 3 assists? Sure. And that would bump him from being the player who was 38 this season to being a top 30 with legitimate top 20 potential. But I don't think a top 10 return would be on the cards for Love. But he is still a very good player and an unfair recipient of a lot of the criticism of things that have gone wrong in Cleveland. I also don't expect that he will play only 28 minutes per game as he did this season. That should go back to 31, 32, especially if he goes to another team. But injuries have been a concern for Love. You know, offensively, he's still a real weapon. He shoots the ball fantastically well. Defensively, he's got his issues. He's never going to be bringing out blocks and steals to help your fantasy team or to help his real life team. But he is still a very, very good player who can be, you know, a real chance to sneak his way back into the top 20 next season. If, you know, if not the top 20, then probably the top 30 is a real chance. Even if he remains in Cleveland and LeBron goes, does he take his usage back to that 29 that he had in Minnesota? And he was only at 24 this season. Well, maybe he doesn't go to 29, but 27 or 28. Give him to 20 points, get him to 10 boards, get those assists, double those assists, which is a real possibility. And you're talking about that bloke who is then a top 25 sort of a fantasy player. Outside of those two guys, it was an absolute wasteland of fantasy numbers. The next highest ranked player on this team was Larry Nance Jr., and he didn't play for this team the majority of the season. We saw him for the Lakers most of the time, and most of that value came from him being a member of the Lakers. Overall, Nance's season at 25 years of age, 66 games, 21.5 minutes, 8.7 points, 6.8 rebounds, 1.3 steals, and 0.6 blocks, 58 and 66. But when Nance came over and they decided they were going to put him into that starting lineup, Ty Lue screwed around with shit and wasn't giving him a large enough role, even though in the regular season he was clearly the best option there ahead of guys like Jeff Green and ahead of guys like Tristan Thompson. When he got that opportunity with Kevin Love out, he really killed it. He had a 5-game starting stretch before he himself got injured, where he had 22 and 15 with 2 steals, 13, 13, 3 and 4, 16 and 12 with a steal and a block, 16 and 8. And then he hurt his hamstring. So that was a really strong stretch. And even the 3 games prior to that, coming off the bench, 10 and 10, 13, 7 with a steal and 3 blocks, and 14 and 8. Really, really good numbers for Nance. He was able to put up pretty strong numbers in his time in LA in limited minutes as well. If we have a look at his, you know, per game numbers in LA, where he played 22 minutes per game, 8.6 points, 7 rebounds, 1.5 steals, 0.5 blocks on 60% field goal. So his value is obviously coming from that field goal percentage, but also his ability to get steals and to get blocks, which are, you know, really key there. Now, can Larry Nance become a 27-minute per game guy? I'm not sure. He did struggle a little bit as the season wore on and as we headed into the playoffs. But defensively, I think he can be a part of this team, a strong part of a decent team. A plus 5.5 on off is a decent number. Good defensive box score, plus minus numbers for Nancy. Strong PER of almost 22, strong true shooting of 59, really good win shares numbers. If he was a 25-minute per game guy, he'd be a guy that I would consider as a standard league type of player. But we just don't know if that's going to be the case. Now, per 36, he's a top 80 player for this year. 14 and 11, 2 steals, 1 block, 59%. Great numbers. He's never going to play 36 minutes a night, but if you give him to 27 minutes a night, I think he can improve on the fact that he was the 113th ranked player this year and be a top 100 player, and that would clearly, clearly have use. But of course, it's all going to depend. Do the Cavs find a way to dump Tristan Thompson? Does Kevin Love get traded and Nance finds himself in a large role? I think that there is probably a 50% outcome that Larry Nance is a top 75 player next season based on steals, blocks, field goal percentage, and rebounds. And if LeBron and Love leave, that 15% usage that he had this season, if I have a look at what his usage actually was in Cleveland, I imagine it was a little bit lower. No, actually 17% in Cleveland. He can get to 20% on that high efficiency. That bumps you up to maybe being 11 point per game guy. He's in a really, really intriguing situation for how things could shake out in Cleveland. Now, if they bring back a center with that number 8 pick, if Wendell Carter slides, if Mo Bamba's there, if Michael Porter's there, not a center, but a guy that plays at the 4, how does that impact Nance? Possibly a bit, but Nance is not a 30-minute per game guy and not a player that needs 30 minutes per game to be a useful fantasy contributor. Give him 25 and he is probably going to be a top 100 player. So the advanced stats all love him. He showed strong flashes. He struggled a bit in the playoffs. Nobody is denying that, but I don't think he was a complete write-off. And they did go away from him in the Toronto series and barely played him. But when he came back against Boston, I thought he did well. He was okay against the Warriors. But I can see some pretty strong performances coming from Nance next season with the way that this roster is looking like it may play out. Rocket, Rodney Hood. It was obviously not great for Rocket this season. He struggled. He had a PER of only 12 in his time at Cleveland. Bad defensive box score plus minus. Bad offensive. Bad true shooting. Bad win share stuff. It just was really disappointing to see what Hood was able to do. And to be honest, his time in Utah wasn't as good as we anticipated. Now, when we did the preseason projections, Rodney Hood was a guy that I looked at and went, you know what, there is a breakout chance here, but he was a guy who had risk associated with him with injuries, and also a player that when we did the projections, yeah, the scoring came out high, but nothing else came out really looking good. And he was a guy that, from memory, when we looked at the preseason projections, he was outside the top 100. Many people were thinking that he'd be a guy that they could, you know, that would be a top 80, top 70 sort of guy, but the numbers never projected out that way, and he clearly never finished there, finishing the year as a top 150 player. His time, I think it's important to have a look at the difference between what he did in Utah and Cleveland. In Utah, in his 28 minutes per game, he averaged 17 points, 3 rebounds, 1.7 assists, and 0.8 steals, and shot 42% and 39% from the field and from 3. In Cleveland, in 25 minutes, he averaged 11 points per game, 2.6 rebounds, 1.4 assists, and 0.7 steals, and actually shot better, 44%. So what's the difference between his time in Utah and his time in Cleveland? Well, the usage went from 27% to 18%. His defense floundered in his time in Cleveland. He took fewer threes. He got to the line less often. His two-point percentage dropped as well. But his assist percentage, of course, playing alongside LeBron James, that is a real concern. Rebounding-wise, defensively, steals-wise, all that stuff was really similar. He just didn't handle the ball anywhere near as much. He saw his turnover percentage cut in to be a third of what it was in Utah, meaning he's just not handling the ball as much, and it really did play with his confidence, and we know he has real confidence issues, real anxiety issues. Now, if Rocket Rodney Hood finds himself as a starter on this team or another team in the restricted free agency process, is he a guy that challenges the top 100? Probably not. And the reason is because he just doesn't do enough in his rebounding. He doesn't get steals. He doesn't get assists. He scores. He does it inefficiently. He doesn't get to the line either. And they are all things he had the ability this season to step up, and he didn't, even when he was in a role on a team who was crying out for someone to do that in Utah. He wasn't able to do any of those things that were necessary. So I don't think, even if LeBron leaves, even if Kevin Love leaves, even if he goes to a team, say it's Memphis, say he goes to Orlando, wherever he goes, he is not a player who's going to be a top 50 player, because his fantasy profile screams points and points. Like, it doesn't, and that's valuable, but it's also Andrew Wiggins. And we don't love Andrew Wiggins as a fantasy player. And while they're completely different on-court types, their fantasy overall profile is pretty similar in that sort of respect. Another player who came across in a trade at the trade deadline for this team was Georgie Hill, who'd been starting in Sacramento. He'd been injured in Sacramento. He'd been disappointing in Sacramento. And most of that shit continued during his time in Cleveland. He played 28 minutes per night in Cleveland for 9.4 points, averaged 2.7 rebounds and 2.8 assists. And we could look at that and go, yeah, LeBron, the assists. In Sacramento, he averaged exactly the same amount of assists, exactly the same amount of rebounds, exactly the same amount of steals, and just 0.9 points extra per game than what he was able to do in Cleveland. Now, he also saw his 45% three-point shooting in Sacramento dip to 35, which was a weird sort of dip considering the quality of the looks he received in Cleveland were better than what we saw from him in Sacramento. But overall, it just wasn't a great year for George Hill. Hill is 32 years of age at the moment. He was the 157th ranked player. Back when Paul George was injured a couple of years ago, he was a top 50 type fantasy guy when he himself could stay healthy. But this is 3-4 years in a row where George Hill hasn't been able to stay healthy. He's 32, and I know I say players are injury prone until they aren't, and players are Ironmen until they aren't. If you're doing that for 4 years in a row and it's continuing as you're into your, you know, early 30s and you're 32 years of age, I don't have faith that your body's going to remarkably heal itself and not start to break down even further. That's an age-related thing. It's not a fluke-related thing. It's not an injury-related thing. That's the real concern with George Hill. Yes, he's a low turnover player, but the assists weren't there. The scoring's dipping. Shoots threes, does that nicely, gets some okay steal numbers, but nothing spectacular on the steal front from George Hill. In fact, he hasn't even got more than 1.1 steals over the last five seasons. Not a high assist guy, can hit threes and can do it relatively efficiently, and that's where his value is. But at 32 years of age, I'm not really sure. Again, LeBron could be gone, but George Hill is probably not going to be a guy who takes on a 27% usage and becomes a 20-point scorer. Yeah, he's more likely to be, he's almost like a point guard version of Courtney Lee at this spot, and not the sort of guy that we saw in that year back in Indiana in 14-15, where he averaged 16-4-5 in the 43 games he played without Paul George. But in, I guess if we're going to go rosy-colored outlook here, his year in Utah, he averaged 17-3.5-4 on 48% shooting on a usage of 23%. Is he a possibility to maybe be a 15-16 point per game guy with five assists? Yeah. Is that useful? Yeah. So depending on what happens, where he is, if he remains in Cleveland, who leaves, who comes, I could see him being a back-end point guard, but I wouldn't be putting massive faith into him, and I think the injuries for him are a real significant concern at this point, given the age that George Hill currently is at. Jordan Clarkson, who some knob proclaimed was a top five two-way player in the entire NBA in the 2016 season, it was shit house. I have said this ad nauseum for many years. Now, I liked Jordan Clarkson when he got drafted. I loved him when Kobe went down in his rookie season, but I couldn't state it any more clearly at that point that that would be the best stretch of time he would have in his NBA career. He is a bad defender. He takes bad shots. He's a poor shooter. He cannot pass. He is a bad NBA player. He was atrocious this season. He struggled in LA. He had these weird stretches of high efficiency and high usage, which again, I was very, very cautious of, saying this shit can't continue. It clearly couldn't. And you can look at him and go, man, he averaged 14.5 points in 24 minutes, six man type numbers. Is it? No, it's not. The answer is no, it isn't. He had a 28% usage in LA on a true shooting of 53. That is a misrepresentation of your own talents. Defensively, he is horrendous, and he struggled so much more in Cleveland. He is nothing more than a... He's a worse player than Tyler Johnson? Yeah, significantly. But he is like a 20-21 minute per game sort of a player. Clarkson ended the season as the 174th ranked player. He just turned 26, 23 minutes, 14 points. Hey, 14 points, cool. But 2.7 boards, 2.7 assists, 0.7 steals, and he had 0.1 blocks. That looks like a misprint because he just never blocks shots. 45-80. He's just an overly high usage player who is horrendous and can't stay on the court for the majority of the time that he is, that he should be out there. PR of 15, true shooting of 56 in Cleveland is all right, but defensively he's just a complete liability. I don't have any faith in Jordan Clarkson being able to change what he does in his game to become a useful fantasy option at any point outside of, say, 16-team leagues, maybe 14-team leagues. Don't get sucked into Jordan Clarkson again. Many people always do, and I don't believe that you should be one of those people who gets sucked into the Jordan Clarkson vortex. Kyle Korver just continues to really be amazing. At 37 years of age, played 73 games, 22 minutes, 9 points, 2.2 triples, half a steal, half a block, 46, 89, and 44%. One of the best shooters, if not the best shooter, in the NBA outside of Steph Curry. Another guy that you know, you can just get your three-pointers at any sort of point from a guy like this. Yeah, putting up really, really good three-point numbers and elite three-point percentage numbers, which is key if you play in a three-point percentage league. But the role that he played this year, just 22 minutes down from 26 the year before and 30 the year before that, at age 37, this is who he is now. He's a 20, 24-minute per game sort of a player. He'll get you two threes, maybe 10 points, and absolutely nothing else. And I don't think, for as good as Kyle Korver is, I don't think we should be expecting anything more than that. He still can be a solid enough defender, and that can keep him on the court. He was a massive 10.9 in on-off this season, led this entire team. George Hill was actually second in 9.8, which is a little bit of a surprise. But Korver was really, really strong this year. Jeff Green, the player that many people just can't quit. He was the 190th ranked player this season. He will turn 32 at the beginning of the year. 78 games, 24 minutes, 11-3-1, 0.7 threes, half a steal, half a block, 48, 87, and 31. And for a guy on a minimum contract who'd been absolutely horrendous for the majority of his career, he was okay. But for fantasy, he just doesn't give it to us. What are these numbers giving us that are exciting, really, when we look at it? 15.5, 5, and 2 per 36, subpass, no steals, no blocks, minimal threes, okay percentages. Nothing really good comes from looking at Jeff Green. Now, a positive plus minus, 5.7 on-off, is really, really strong. But his other advanced numbers aren't really anything to write home about. We've seen the good from Jeff Green. We saw a Game 7 performance of 19-8 in 42 minutes against the Boston Celtics. We saw him drop 33 points on only 12 shots against the Philadelphia 76ers in April. We saw him have 24 points against the Hawks in February on a high usage night. We saw multiple 20-point games from him. We also saw absolutely shitful performances of 5 points against the Wizards in 16 minutes, 8 points against the Clippers, and 7 points against the Lakers on back-to-back nights in over 20 minutes per game. He is unreliable for us, and I don't ever see him pushing back into a large enough role, considering his on-court deficiencies, to ever really be a fantasy guy. He hasn't been a top 100 player in any of the past 5 seasons. Yes, in 13-14 and 14-15, he was a top 120 guy, but not a top 100 player. Just think of him as a significantly worse Markieff Morris, a guy that just, when he does play those minutes, he can be your 12th best guy on your roster, your 11th best guy, but no upside to be higher than that. And that is the 1% outcome, or the 99th percent outcome, for what Jeff Green is able to do. So shout out to you, Jeff.
My name is Jeff.
But yeah, you're done. Speaking of done, J.R. Smith, the plumber, 33 years of age, 80 games, 28 minutes, 8 points, 2 threes, 3 rebounds, 1.8 assists, 0.9 steals, 40, 70, 38, just not good at all anymore. Can't really produce anything for fantasy. He's a 3-point streamer. That is literally about all you get from JR. And a robust PR of 8.5, negative box score plus minus, is horrendous win share numbers. Saw his role change as the season went on. Went from starter, bench for Dwayne Wade, back to starter. Yeah, minutes varying all over the place. A negative 7.6 on-off is really, really poor. The only players on this team worse were Isaiah Thomas, Jay Crowder, and Derrick Rose. And obviously those three guys were all pissed off out of this team because of how poorly they played. He was not good. He's never going to be a fantasy impact guy. Tristan Thompson, I don't need to talk much about him. Jose Calderon, Kendrick Perkins, Akaro White. But two guys I do want to end this up talking about are Ante Zizic and Chedi Osman. Two rookies, two European guys who, especially Zizic, I'm really interested to see what happens with them long term. Now, Zizic only played 32 games, 7 minutes a game, 4 points, 2 rebounds, half a block, 73 from the field and 72 from the line for a true shooting of 75 is obviously very, very sexy. A PER of 24 is excellent. Win share is excellent. Box score plus minus, pretty solid. What can we look at with what Zizic did? Well, his per 36 numbers are sensationally good. 20 and 10, 2 blocks, 70%. Love it, love it, love it. But what have we really got to base this on? He only started 2 games for the season. One of them he started and played 5 minutes. what's the point of that? Let's look at the other one where he played 20 minutes and had 14 and 6 with a block on 7 of 9 shooting. Tristan Thompson's not that good anymore. Does Kevin Love get traded? If Ante Zizic is in line for 20 minutes per game, he is a legitimate top 200 fantasy guy, and that's probably being very, very cautious. He can be better than that. Against the Knicks on the last game of the year, 27 minutes, 20 points, 7 rebounds. He played over 20 minutes. He played 20 minutes per game, so three times. He had that game I mentioned, 14 and 6 with a block against the Bulls. He had a game against the Lakers of 20 minutes where he had 15 and 7 with two blocks. And then he had 20 and 7 in 27 minutes against the Knicks. If he plays, think Boban. If he plays, he will put up numbers. I guarantee you that. Can he stay on the court? His defense is a concern, right? But on a team that might be struggling, might be tanking as the Cavs could be next season, if this bloke gets 24 minutes per night, he will be a must-own player. Now, you shouldn't be necessarily spending up massive amounts to acquire him in Dynasty because his defensive deficiencies, they're a worry, they're a concern, and they could limit what he can do. But there's no reason why he can't be an extremely high efficiency guy who blocks shots, gets rebounds, scores, and hits his free throws at a high rate. Think of like a Nikola Pekovic sort of a player who can also block shots and score at probably a higher rate than what Pekovic did. He's really, really interesting from a fantasy point of view. It's all about finding the opportunity to be on the court. He's not a guy that was doing it on 27% usage. He's on 19% usage that he was able to put up these really, really impressive numbers in the times that he did play. Now, in his mop-up minutes, it's hard to gauge. And when you score 5 and 2 in 8 minutes, what does that really mean? But on the three occasions that he played 20 minutes, crushed it in each of those three games. 60 minutes is not a sample size that tells you anything, but his numbers coming across from the Adriatic League, they were comparable to Nikola Jokic and Jusuf Nurkic. They were the only guys in the same league as him in terms of those numbers that he put up there. The translations looked fantastic for him coming across rookie-wise, and the three times we got to see it happen this year, he delivered. So while it's all small sample size, while it's all theoretical when we look at it in translation-wise, when the translations, when the statistics, when the prior precedents of other players tell you one thing, and then we see it in a few games and it backs up that thing, I feel decently confident that there is an ability for him to be a player there. I don't know how he's going to be able to find himself in a large enough role, but this team has got so much shit going on. Does Tristan get dumped? Does Love go? Does LeBron go? Do we see Zizic as a regular every night part of the rotation? I think that's a legit, legit chance next season, and I'm pretty interested to see it. The other guy that came across, and he's only 21, the other guy that came across this season, the Turkish wing player, Cedi Osman. 61 games, 11 minutes, 4 points, 2 rebounds, half a 3, 0.7 assists, 0.4 steals, 48, 57, and 37%. The Cavs claimed that they traded away Dwayne Wade because they wanted to get more minutes for Osman. Seemed like a weird thing to say at the time. Seemed even weirder afterwards when it didn't really happen. But when there was a ton of injuries on this Cavs team, Osman was starting. And he had a bit of a run there in late February, early March, where he was impressive. He had a stretch of 9 consecutive starts, 16-6-5-3, 12-5-1-1, 5-2-1, 4-2, 10-3-1-1-1, 4-1, 7-3, 6-1, 13-3, 12-6. Like their numbers, and there's a few shit performances in there where he'd start and play only 15 minutes, but on the nights where he played over 20 minutes in those starts, 16-6-5, 12-5, 10-3-1, 13-3, and then 12-6. Their numbers where I look at them and go, you know what? There's a little bit of something there. And of course, he plays the same position as one LeBron Raymond James. Not saying that Osman is going to become LeBron James by any stretch, but LeBron leaves, Jeff Green doesn't come back. Who the hell's playing on the wing? Is it Bridges that they draft? Maybe. But Osman should see a boost in what he can do next season. Now, is he the most fantasy-friendly guy? Nah, not really. 12 and 6 per 36 minutes, 1.2 steals, 2 assists. Shot an impressive 47% from the field. Shot a disheartening 54% from the line. Now, that should be able to improve significantly next season. I'm not sure about the shooting. It started off quite well, the three-point shooting, and that dipped pretty considerably. But overall, a 56% true shooting across his 740 minutes for the year is a win as a rookie. There is, you know, some real ability for that to change as we move forward. Well, I thought Osman, you know, did enough at times where he should be able to find himself as a regular part of the rotation as we move forward. Also, a plus 3.4 on the season. Nowhere near the same upside as Zizic, but a wing player who can handle the ball a little bit, who can score, who can shoot, and can play a little bit of defense. Still a long way to go there. That's really valuable in the NBA. So if Rocket leaves, if LeBron leaves, there is real opportunity here for Osman to become a player that you'd want to pay attention to in 16-team leagues. And depending on how everything else shakes out, hey, might be a late-round flyer type of guy. I think at this point, my best late-round flyer guy for next season, really early, is going to be Brandon Knight in Phoenix. Wait, a lot of stuff can change, but no one remembers anything about Brandon Knight. And there is a real opportunity for him there, depending on how things play out. So, interesting. Osman and Zizic, some really interesting pieces, but there's this team is a real weird one as we head into next season. Don't forget, guys, if you do enjoy this podcast, go leave a 5-star rating. Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, and on YouTube, where you can leave a comment, hit that red subscribe button, and give me a big fat thumbs up. Check out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network, including Locked On NBA, where we're doing our Locked On Network mock draft. We are through the first 18 picks at the time of you listening to this. Most likely, it might even be more. Myself, David Locke, Jeremy Wu, Jake Madison, giving comments on all the picks, plus all the hosts of the individual teams making selections as the GMs of those teams. Some great stuff going down there. Really was impressed with the selections that nearly every team made, as you'll hear me and Jake when we give our analysis on those picks. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.
LeBron James.